needs work. Hi, this is Paul Dini.
This is Misty Lee. What the hell was that?
I don't know. It's just, you know, Rashi said he wanted to kick off the show, and...
And that's what he chose?
Like idiots, we let him do it. So, yeah.
He decides to tell everybody that you're like Ed Wood and you wear chick's clothes?
I look better in chick's clothes than Ed Wood ever did.
Oh, so. Wow. Well, you don't really have any Angora sweaters anyway, so.
No, I'm too big for chick's clothes. You know, it's like I get that Margaret Dumont look. That's the most I can pull off.
You know, I think Margaret Dumont
chasing Groucho Marx around.
Yeah, you know, I think the universe would be vastly improved with a monocle.
A monocle? Yeah. If we all wore monocles?
Yeah, I think so. I don't think they're very functional because then you got to kind of walk around winky and it jacks up your depth perception and you can't cap pens.
No.
These are the problems of wearing monocles, right?
The only person I've ever seen, the only two people I've ever seen pull off monocles.
No, you see people wear monocles live and not on Halloween?
No, yeah. Well, the only people...
Is one of them the elephant mask? Because...
No. Okay. Charlie McCarthy, who's actually...
He's not a people.
And the penguin, who's also not a people.
He's not a people either.
No, I mean, that's it. I mean, other than...
Monopoly Man. Oh, wait.
What?
Also not a people.
Who? Monopoly Man.
I don't think the Monopoly Man wears a monocle.
I thought he did.
I don't think he does.
I think he does sometimes for promos. But I think on the actual, like, game board, I don't think he did. Look it up.
Scrooge McDuck wears a pince-nez. You know, like the little...
What the hell's that?
The little glasses to pinch the bridge
of
your nose.
Oh, that's what pince-nez is. We pinch your nose. Pinch your head.
Yeah. Yeah.
What is that? Squish your head.
Yeah.
That was Kids in the Hall. I was going to say about monocles, John Chadwick was, I've been on this penny farthing kick.
Yes.
And I just can't stop talking about penny farthings.
What,
you guys
the
know what they are? Yeah.
Yeah, the penny
have we talked
bicycle.
About it on here?
Yeah.
Because I haven't stopped talking about it. So I get this Facebook message from John Chadwick and he's like, there's a dude that rides a penny farthing around my neighborhood. And I'm like, please tell me he at least has a monocle. But I guess he rides his penny farthing around John and Laura's neighborhood. John and Laura Chadwick are friends of ours in Georgia.
And
he wears bicycle clothes, like bicycling ensemble. And John is like, you know, the least he could do for us is wear a stovepipe hat.
No, by bicycling ensemble, do you mean like the spandex,
yes.
You know, like the biker shorts and everything like
yes,
that?
Yes, which is like
but
sort
on
of
a penny,
funny.
On a penny farthing.
On a penny
bike.
Farthing, which makes this guy
no,
a
okay, that is
total
wrong.
Twit.
Because you have to dress up in like a morning coat and a top hat.
Agreed.
Spats.
Yes.
In order to ride a penny farthing.
Yes.
Or at least a sportswear jacket like Patrick McGoohan in The Prisoner.
Yeah, okay, I'll give
a
you that.
A show that I've
I'll
never seen and know nothing about.
Of course, yeah, as you always say.
Yeah.
How ridiculous, though, would one of those aerodynamic biker helmets look on an idiot on a penny farthing? Hysterical!
Yeah, it looked pretty wacky.
But see, what I want to know is, and I have to ask John and Laura, so John and Laura, if you're listening on your commutes, then please let us know.
Uh-huh.
Does the guy yell, falling, falling? Because I have to know this.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really important. But I said to him, I said, please tell me at least has a monocle. John said he hadn't had a good look at him, but would let me know. So we're still waiting for this information.
Actually, if anybody...
Chad would hunt him down.
If anybody out there listening wears a monocle or knows anybody who does wear a monocle...
Don't admit it. We don't want to know.
Could you post it somewhere online where we could see it? Because we want to find out, is this still an option? Can you actually buy these? Now, at the optometrist... I've never
asked. You know,
the
optometrists have trays of them that's, you know, which is better, one or two?
Yeah, but you can't take those with
you. Or three or four, says you.
Well, I'm sure if you just stole
them. They have whole trays of them, and you just put a little chain on it. Man.
And you say, I came in with it.
This is my monocle. That's my poodoo plant.
Oh, and my cigarette holder also, and my top hat.
Yes, my stovepipe hat. And they were like, you weren't wearing those things when you came. Prove I wasn't.
It was really cool the way Rocksteady reworked the monocle for the penguin for the Arkham video game.
I love that.
Well,
they do.
We put a broken bottle in his eye. Like somebody had broken a Coke bottle and just screwed it in a penguin's eye permanently.
That's
like
disgusting.
It looks really rad.
No, it looks great. Yeah. It looks like someone took a Coke bottle and just like put it
gross.
In there. Oh, I thought it was wonderful.
Yeah.
It looks great.
So what's wrong about Monopoly Man? He doesn't have a monocle.
No.
That's Mr. Peanut.
Oh, Mr. Peanut!
Yeah.
You know who else has a monocle that really pulls it off is that accessorizing cat on the interwebs.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what I'm talking about? It's like cute, and then it goes from like, what does it go from cute to awesome? I don't know what it is, but anyway, it's a little white puffy cat, and it's really cute. Then they show it with a mustache, and it's better. Uh-huh. And then they show it with a mustache and a monocle and a top hat, and it is the bomb.
I think the Tipsy Fox has one also.
I don't know what the Tipsy Fox is.
It's like a liquor store way out in the middle of nowhere that I drive by.
That's hysterical. You know, here That's in Burbank, awesome. We actually have circus yeah. liquors, and they advertise it with a big giant clown. How confusing is that?
Yeah. I love circus liquors.
Yeah.
That's known to everybody. Farmwide is liquor clown.
Liquor clown.
We gotta go to the liquor clown. Like years ago, when I would go over to Theory Night at John Crisfalusi's house, we'd stop at Liquor Clown and get beer. And
what is Theory Night at John Crisfalusi? Okay, got John Crisfalusi created Ren and Stimpy and a wealth of a million other things. Look at him; he's got a blog online. Yeah. Check out his stuff. But what the hell is Theory Night at his house?
Well, that was a long time ago. Is that he would have like these nights where we'd sit around and talk about theories of animation. Yeah, that's what he called it. Was Theory Night, where he'd talk about.
Kind of nerd says, come to my house for theory night.
Every nerd says that. It doesn't Y'all matter if you're nerds. Animation or...
You are nerds.
Or computer nerds do it. Comic book nerds.
Come to my house for theory night.
Well, theory night was fun. We'd go over
That's
there.
Ridiculous.
We'd get liquored up, and then we'd talk about which cartoonist we'd like.
On clown liquor.
On clown liquor.
You guys get clown liquored up and go over there and talk theory about cartoons.
Yeah,
you know what?
It was a lot of fun.
Never mind. You're not nerds. That's kind of cool.
It was very cool. It was very cool. It was fun because we'd watch old cartoons and we'd, screen them.
Yeah.
Because it was like before DVDs, before all the good stuff was out on DVDs. I guess DVDs were invented, but still, we'd watch old
prints. When did DVDs get popular?
Early 2000s, something like that.
Really?
Really?
The aughts?
Okay. When did they...
I was working in a video store and we made the transition and they're starting to get big, but we were one of the first to make the transition. I think that was...
What video store were you working at?
It was Castle Video. It was just a small mom and pop store up
those.
In Castaic.
Yeah,
and it was probably... Let's see, it would have been before I graduated. So, yeah, it was late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah, I remember them being around like mid, 90s, or late 90s.
They started late 90s, but everyone started getting them and renting them and becoming more popular early 2000s.
Okay, now my question is, what's next? Now we have the Blu-ray, but it's still
digital
basically a disc.
Is next. Digital is where you can walk around with everything. You have your entire digital library in this little tiny one thing.
Okay, because you can get
cloud.
Movies
The One
now.
Ring.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So DVDs are on the way out. We know that. And so you get a movie.
Mm-hmm.
And
do you
so
know what is really
released.
Interesting?
What?
Is I ordered that really offensive movie, Tiptoes, on DVD because it was an emergency as soon as I read what it was about.
Oh, you bought that, huh?
It was such an emergency. Do you know what it is?
No.
Matthew McConaughey and Kate Beckinsale.
Matthew McConaughey is an emergency?
I'm not finished.
Oh, sorry. Boy.
Gary Oldman
well,
and
better.
Patricia Arquette.
Oh, the midget movie. Uh-huh. I have heard of this.
Thank you.
Yes, that sounds brilliant.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah, no, it's not brilliant. It's awful.
No.
It's
brilliantly
terrible.
Awful.
Yeah, it's like The Room bad, from what I understand.
Gary Oldman and Matthew McConaughey
is The Room. We've
midget,
never watched
or a short,
no, we have
short
a, I've
person,
tried to watch it.
Little person oh. brother.
Yeah. It, well, here's what it is. Kate Beckinsale and Matthew McConaughey are in a romantic relationship.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
Kate Beckinsale gets knocked up. And the whole movie is she finds out that Matthew McConaughey's entire family are midgets and dwarves. And there's a difference, but he's the only one that's not. And so seriously, this is not a comedy, and it should be, but it is not a comedy. And the whole movie apparently is about her decision whether or not she's going to abort because they might have a midget baby. How unpolitically correct... Well, awful and terrible is it, but here's the thing. Gary Oldman plays a midget. I'm in.
And I hear it's like a really bad one. Like it looks like they just put shoes on his knees.
Like Dorf?
Yeah. Oh, Dorf. Oh, it's
Dorf
horrible.
On golf. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I Matthew McConaughey was all throughout the movie like, oh, yeah, no, they're little people. No, don't worry, you'll get used to it, you'll understand. And at the end, when he finds out he's having a midget kid, he's like, what? How dare you? And just flips out on it.
You just totally ruined the movie. Spoiler.
Isn't this?
I didn't know.
This is the same plot as the new Muppet movie.
Yeah.
I mean, it's sort of like
and
Jason.
And Lord of the Rings.
Well, Jason Segel is like a normal guy, but he's got a Muppet brother. And he doesn't. And the Muppet brother doesn't know he's
so
a Muppet.
So that's the sequel.
Oh, it is.
The Muppet movie is a sequel to Tiptoes.
I hope there are more laughs
you
in
heard
the Muppet
it here first,
movie
folks.
Than there are in the Midget movie.
I heard from Kathleen David that the Muppet movie was excellent. And coming from her, that means something.
I heard it was great.
Kathleen David, if you guys don't know who Kathleen is, you should.
Yeah.
She is married to Peter David, but that's only one of many reasons why she's cool. She also makes puppets, and she's really good at it. And she does a ton of other things. She works with her hands, and she's just, she creates things. She does, oh my God, she's wonderful. But she's kind of a Muppet elitist. And when she said it was good, I said, okay.
Well,
see.
You know,
I said, now I'm stoked to see it.
I had my doubts at first because I like Jason Segel and I like the Muppets. But from what I saw of it early, yes, that's the same thing. I mean, I like white anchovies. And I like...
You like dark chocolate, but together not so much.
Maybe not so much, but...
although knowing you, you would.
Although like I had white anchovies last week. And
did you have them with dark chocolate? Because I'll puke.
No, I had them on that pizza with weird ingredients and they were still very good.
Yeah, but you liked that.
Yeah.
Those tomatoes that they like called up and they got on the plane for you from Italy or whatever.
Yeah, we had a Pizzeria Mazza last week for Eddie Gordetsky's birthday and we had some absolutely astonishing pizza, which was like hand-raised... Carried around a baby carriage, heirloom tomatoes, gently crushed, and then married with white anchovies.
Yeah,
really,
I mean,
really
like
wonderful.
In a really lavish ceremony, they crushed a glass and everything.
Yeah,
yeah, it was really something
exceptional. But you know, the thing about I thought from the early scenes that it looked like okay, this is a Jason Segel movie. Amy Adams,
we're talking
Jason
about the
Segel
movie still.
With special guest star.
My brain is back on tiptoes.
The Muppets. And then I found out that was not the case. And then I saw the opening sequence from the movie, and I'm going like, okay, this has the fun, goofy feel, but upbeat feel of the better Muppet movies. So I'm really stoked to see it. And by the time this episode airs, we will have seen it, because I think we're going to go see it. Like, I'm going to be standing outside the theater to watch it.
I'm still thinking about Gary Oldman as a dwarf.
Well, you think about Gary Oldman as a dwarf. I'm standing outside... waiting to see Dr. Teeth and the Electric Mayhem and Ralph.
Did
and
you
Scooter.
Mention that you almost bought their bus on here?
Mm-hmm. What?
Oh, he has talked
Dr.
about
Teeth's
it?
Bus? Yeah.
Okay. Boy, all our stories are old. I got nothing.
I know. We've been doing this a year and
then
repeating.
Yeah. Wow.
I saw these amazing.
We said everything we got to say.
Although I did see these amazing posters online recently, and I guess the artist got permission to sell them. And they are like, they look like old Fillmore posters, like, or Winterland posters. You know, Winterland was the big concert venue in downtown San Francisco years ago. And for the Electric Mayhem. And they're really great posters. And it's five different posters of each band member. And it's got, you know, this great red poster for Dr. Teeth.
Well,
and this
you better send
yellow
Santa
golden one
link.
For Janice. And they all look really, really terrific. I don't know. I'm going to see if you can order them. I'm not sure when they're coming out or if they're just one shots or whatever. But they look pretty good. I would love to get the Dr. Teeth one and hang it up someplace. That would be
hang it over the piano there.
Oh, yeah, Dr. Teeth's on the piano.
He is on our piano. You know, most people have, like, a bust of Beethoven or something. We have a bust of Dr. Teeth on our piano.
Yeah, because, well, Dr. Teeth, he's infinitely cooler than Beethoven.
I prefer him.
Yeah.
I do.
Yeah.
Dr. Teeth wasn't deaf.
No, he wasn't.
No.
Nope.
No, he should be, though. They play pretty loud. I think they're all a little kind of squirrely.
I'm totally down with that.
Yeah. I mean, what's great about the Electric Mayhem is they've been playing since... the mid-70s, and they have not aged a day. So that's either the power of positive thinking
or the advantage
great
of being a Muppet.
Yeah, being made out of felt. That's another thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
No, that's a Kool-Aid.
Oh, yeah. They did a thing on Robot Chicken, you know, like what if, you know, like a behind the music thing about.
That was funny. Like a VH1 behind the music thing.
Yeah. It was sad, though, because it's like Floyd and Janice had to put Animal down, and it was heartbreaking, and Janice had HIV because she had slept around with all these guys. And
that's Robot Chicken.
And then Dr. Teeth was like, was teaching piano to like the Spanky doll that you always dress up as every kid. Because I guess years ago, Mego did a Little Rascals series, so they still have a lot of little Spankies and Alfalfas, and they use those little kids and everything. Boy, I sure got derailed. What were we talking about, the Muppets?
Gary Oldman is a dwarf.
As a dwarf. So he just put the shoes on his knees.
Like dwarf. I don't know. I haven't seen it yet, but Ezra kind of ruined the movie now that I know that their baby is a midget, so I don't know if I'm going to watch it.
I didn't see it either. I got it ruined for me by, what's the guy who does the TV show where they do the web content?
Tosh.0?
Yeah, Tosh. Mm-hmm. He did a whole thing on his show.
He did?
That's where I saw that.
That does not make it okay. You know, my buddy, I don't know if I ever mentioned this, because now I'm all insecure, and I feel like, that was gross.
Like what? What?
I don't know if I ever mentioned this, because now I'm all, like, insecure, and I don't know what I've talked about and what I haven't. But did I ever tell you about my friend Sean Tabankin and how he used to leave messages on my answering machine?
Yes.
Well, I know I've told you. Don't give me the sideways eye. What? Yeah, but have I talked about it on the... I don't think I have.
No, I don't think you have.
Yeah, well, Sean Tabankin, talk about movie spoilers. When I lived in Lansing, he was in the Army, and he used to call me every once in a while, and every time, if I wasn't there, he would leave, because he saw a lot of movies while he was there, he would leave the ending of every movie that he saw on my friggin' answering machine. He'd be, and he would sneak it in, because I got pissed. And he was like, oh, hey, this is Sean Tabankin, and I hope you're doing well. I just saw The Sixth Sense, and Bruce Willis is really dead. But other than that, you know, I hope you're doing great, and give me a buzz back whenever you can. All right, bye. Bastard. Wow.
Did he ever...
All the time.
Did he ever do, like... Okay, so Steve Martin gets on the train and he's thinking about how good Thanksgiving is going to be, and then he starts thinking that John Candy is really, like, all alone and has to go back for him, and he picks up the crate.
I think you're just bringing this movie up to make yourself cry.
What?
Yeah.
That's a great movie.
It's okay. It's okay.
All right, okay.
You know what I mean? Anytime your movie emotionally culminates in a crappy 80s song... That's a problem.
It's a good problem. All movies should culminate in crappy 80s songs.
Oh, you got me there.
Yeah.
All right.
All great movies culminate in crappy 80s songs, even movies made in the 40s.
Yes.
I don't know how that's possible.
Maltese Falcon with Devo in it.
I don't know.
Yes.
Hey, that would work.
I think it would. Devo. Yeah, totally.
What's that, Dad? Well, Boogie Boy, it's the things dreams are made of.
Yeah.
That would be really cool.
No, it wouldn't.
To reshoot the end of Maltese Falcon like that? Oh, I think it was really great.
It's kind of funny.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't mean to ruin it. I have no idea. I haven't seen it. I have no idea where it happens in the movie, but if I did, I apologize. Mm. But it sounds silly and ridiculous, and I still want to see it.
Yeah, get in line, because I got two people that are ready to borrow it. No one wants to buy it. Nobody will buy it.
I'll Netflix
you can Netflix it. Oh, this is why I brought it up. Interestingly enough, I had a point. Can you imagine? What gives? Uh-huh. First time that happened on the podcast. It was $4.04 for the DVD on Amazon. And that included my Prime shipping was free. So it's like, it really was $4.04. Or $9.95 for an instant digital download. And I thought... That's ridiculous. That is backwards. Why would I want to pay more to not have a tangible copy? But their argument was, it's instant. I don't care. I can wait. I've been waiting my whole life. I can wait 2 more days for the midget movie. This is so politically incorrect. Little we are going to get nailed.
Little people.
We are so sorry for being insensitive. You can call me a twat magician if you want. I don't even know. A trick turner. I'm trying to think of what a politically incorrect thing for a magician to be called would be.
Tricks on the street corner for money?
I do turn tricks for a living, but not those kind.
A card flabber.
A finger flicker?
I don't know.
That's what we call them, the card guys. I call
rabbit
them
finger squeezer.
Flickers. I don't squeeze rabbits. Oh.
Rabbit yanker?
This is getting obscene. Yeah.
Okay, I don't know.
Just trying to think of what a derogatory term for magicians would be.
Dove yodeler?
A what?
I don't know.
Okay.
I'm out.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think of, like, what would I find offensive, and there's next to nothing.
Wand whisker?
What? A wand whisker?
Yeah, I don't know.
You know what's interesting? I've probably said this before, too. Boy, what? This is the podcast where Misty's insecure about her content. When I did my very first magic show, did we talk about this? I broke my leg on stage.
No, I don't think we did.
Oh, hey-o! I broke my leg. Everybody said, break a leg.
Oh, no.
And I did. I broke my friggin' leg.
Oh,
so, well, what happened was I had to do a fall into a box. I'm trying to say this without giving the trick away. So I won't tell you what trick I was doing, but I will say I had to drop down into a box. And in this box, there was a piece of wood that was sticking down at a diagonal so that when I came down through the hole that I was supposed to drop, the trapdoor, if you will, that I was supposed to drop down into, I T-boned my right shin on this piece of wood that was sideways.
Wow.
And so it bent my bone, it's unnatural to bend bone anyway, but it bent around, you know, like my bone bent forward around the piece of wood. So like my knee and my toe formed a horseshoe, sort of like that. And so it didn't properly break the bone. It gave me what's called a green fracture, where your leg kind of goes like this. And so it's like splinters. Then it goes back down again. Uh-huh. And so you don't actually need a cast, but you're limping. You know, like you can just wrap it because it will heal itself, but it takes forever. Whereas opposed to like a clean break where it just rejuvenates, you hold it still and it's fine. Mm-hmm. It took forever. But so after that, This is why I brought it up. Again, yeah. I had a point. Instead of saying break a leg, I told everybody, you know what? Say bust a wand. That's better.
Oh, yeah.
I found out that breaking a wand is what you do over a magician's grave. You break their wand and throw it down into the grave with them like their magic is over.
Yeah.
So now they're telling me to kill myself. And I'm just like, well, you know what? I can't win. So we still say bust a wand.
Well, yeah. Bust a wand, not break a wand. Break a wand is like...
Yeah, bust a wand. It's casual.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm like, you know what? Why don't I just have everybody yell Macbeth at me? That'd be better.
Something.
You know, like that's... And for those of you who don't know, that's like a theater thing. You don't say that name.
Yeah, I don't even know if I'm comfortable saying it on a podcast.
I know. I felt like that too. I was kind of like, shut up.
Yeah, spin around and hock a loogie or something.
Hey, now. Are you talking about my Facebook status?
No. Well, burn some sage and clear the air here, you know?
Oh, my God. The other day...
You gotta spin three times and spit if you say Macbeth.
I didn't know that. No. Oh, you just said it too, so you're screwed too. I thought you had to run around the theater three times.
I heard spin.
Okay, so you know what? Fuck it.
Yeah,
I'm just
it doesn't matter.
We'll bleep that. But I'm just going to say Macbeth every time I walk into the theater. I said it with Jonathan and West in the Peller, and he was like, what? And I said, it's not showtime.
That's
it'll be
superstitious.
Fine. It was totally fine.
I'm Scottish. I can say Macbeth anytime I want
to.
I'm immune.
Well, you also don't do a lot of shows.
No.
That's not an issue. Mm. But it was really funny.
Tomorrow creeps in this petty pace from day to day and all our yesterdays.
You make me tired.
What do you mean?
Out damn spot.
Mm-hmm. You know, I saw Renee play Lady Macbeth, and she was really, really, really good.
Nice.
She was excellent. My friend Renee. And this is why I said the loogie thing. Not because I didn't know your version of the legend, that was what you're supposed to do. I always heard you had to run around the theater three times. Which I never did anyways. But then again, I never said it until now. So, and that day in the Peller, and I was like, I ain't running around the castle. You're crazy. So,
can we do a Winter's Tale? A dude gets eaten on stage by a bear. That's pretty cool.
He gets chased by a bear.
No, that's only if you can't afford a bear, real bear. Really, you're supposed to release a live bear, and as that actor is not seen again, he just gets devoured on stage.
Well, I was going to talk about Huck and Loogies, but your idea is much more interesting.
What, a live bear on stage?
Yeah.
Live bears are always cool on stage.
Forget my story. Let's talk about that.
I'm still...
Remember the bear magician?
The bear magician.
We should do that as a short.
Yeah.
Let's not tell them what it is. Let's just do it.
You know, I'm going to get back. I want to get back to monocles for a second. You could pull off a monocle.
We could always. I could not pull off.
If you once, once you're all dolled up,
I would look like I had Bell palsy.
No, if you were wearing like a fancy magician's outfit, like wearing the top hat and like something very goth.
Why would I ass it up with a monocle?
What, not exactly wear it, but have it dangling. You could get away with it.
Well, I will say that the Victorian ladies, and I do own one of these, had a chatelaine. Do you know what that is? I don't know how to say it. It might be Chatelaine. It might be something else. So C-H-E-T.
Oh, a Shetland pony or something like that?
No.
Well, there were some things you could
write. C-H-E-T-L-A-I-N-E. It's a jewelry item.
Okay.
And they wore it on their belts. And it has multiple... I'll show it to you, Emily. Emily's here. Say hi.
Hello.
She said nothing this whole time. She's just sitting there staring at me like a frog. So the anyway, so they wore
like
this
Michigan.
Thing. What?
Like Michigan J-Frog.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Hello, my baby. They had this item of jewelry that looked sort of like a brooch. It was just like a big, round cabochon. No, I mean, I guess they varied in design. So, but on the back, there were multiple hook areas where you could attach several chains. And the lady of the house would wear this thing on her belt and have things like sewing scissors and things that she would use, like an ink pen to sign. I'd imagine that Victorian ladies probably didn't get a lot of packages to sign for like I do. But, you know, I mean, something like that. I don't know, maybe a cigarette. Like I'm a Princess Magic in Victorian days.
Was this before the invention of pockets?
Maybe.
Okay.
But they used to have this thing and they would hang like four or five chains from their belt. And they would put articles and items that they needed all day long, like maybe a hairbrush. I don't know what you have to look it up. But there were common items that went on this thing.
Oh,
it was just basically like an item of jewelry that they could hang chains from, and it was just decorative. And it was like a belt buckle, but it let these things dangle off of them on their long skirt, so it was right at the fingertips.
So it was very it was a decorative thing? You could jazz it up a little bit or something?
Yeah, I mean, it was a functional thing, but then they made it elegant.
Okay.
You know?
Oh, okay.
I see seamstresses or something using them. I don't know why.
Maybe. Yeah, absolutely. You know, but this was like for the lady of the house, you know, like doing lady duties. I guess maybe like a stamp, you know, like to put her stamp on something. Or I don't know. What would a Victorian lady do? Like, I always think about it in terms of me. And I'm like, well,
I was thinking of them either making tea or drinking
and some
tea.
Pens, and I don't know. What else do I do all day?
I still think you
my
could pull off.
My cell phone.
You know? Like, I still think you could pull off a monocle if you did
that
Marlena
Dietrich. Oh, that's why I brought it up. Because one of the things that they would have on there was a looking glass, like a spy glass.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
that they could, you know, like for an older lady, so she could magnify.
Oh, instead of having like spectacles or something like that.
Okay. Yes. Right. So it was elegant,
the
you know.
The pince-nez thing.
Yeah, what is it? Pince-nez?
Pince-nez.
Is that what it's really called, or is that just what you call it?
No, it's pince-nez.
You can't say that without sounding like Alexander Wolcott.
Pince-nez.
Pince-nez.
That's what they were called. That's what they were called.
What did Alex Wolcott's voice sound like?
I don't know. I don't know if there were any recordings. No, there must be recordings.
He was on the radio all the time.
I don't know. I think he was kind of pissy, you know. This is Wolcott speaking. Yeah, I think he was like that. I think he was kind of...
Pince-nez.
Yeah, pince-nez. I think he was kind of like this. Maybe a
you
little...
You sound a little Brando there.
Brando, Truman Capote-ish. Mm-hmm. I mean, from what I know about the man, I can... I don't mean to generalize. I don't mean to
yes,
you know.
Do. Well, you totally mean to generalize.
He sounded like a fussy man. From what I remember hearing, he sounded kind of like a fussy man. He sounded like Sheridan Whiteside in The Man Who Came to Dinner, who he was based on. You know, somebody who's very satisfied in his own little world, and if you set foot in that world, he will chew off that foot.
Well, that was nastier than I was expecting you to get, but I'm down with that. It was very descriptive.
His grandchildren are going to write some very angry letters.
I don't think
Wolcott's grandchildren? Not likely.
No. There weren't a lot of ladies in Alexander Wolcott's life.
There was Harpo, and that was it. Harpo was as close to a lady as he got, I think.
Speaking of which, when I forgot to mention this in our Halloween podcast a couple weeks ago, but there was a guy dressed as Harpo Marx at the Magic Castle on Halloween.
Yeah.
And he was a good Harpo. Daniel Campisi does an excellent Harpo too. Because he loves the character so much. Mm-hmm. And he actually wrote it was good. He wrote a little play with them. But anyway, this guy at the castle was also really excellent. Super expressive face, had the wide open excited mouth, and he had a great costume on, and nobody knew who the hell he was except for me. Now, it bears to mention, and this I'm sure I've brought up before, I only own two autographed photographs, and they are both in my office. One is of Witchy Poo, and Billy Hayes signed it, and the other one is of Harpo Marx. He didn't sign it, but they're the only two 8x10s. They're like publicity shots that I'm a fangirl for. Of course, it's Witchy Poo and Harpo. How caricature.
I gave you that one for Christmas. I bought it in like one of those Hollywood.
You paid a lot of money for it because it was one of his original headshots.
It was.
So, which I certainly appreciate. But those are the only two pictures I have in my office. Now, I knew exactly who he was. And he came up to me and I went, Harpo! Honk, honk. And I said, you know what? I feel like I should, because he went to give me a hug. And I said, oh no. And I gave him my leg. And it just, he was hysterical. He was so happy. Because I will never forget, and Harpo speaks.
Yeah.
He said he did that to the queen.
What was the queen's reaction?
Or was it a prince?
The prince.
It was the prince. That's what it was. Mm-hmm. And I just thought it was hysterical. I think he met the prince and he stuck out his hand and the prince gave him his leg.
Well,
that's what it was. I'm pretty sure. It's in Harpo Speaks. You know what? Don't listen to me. I read books.
No, it is. I remember. I read it not too long ago.
Yeah, but I remember the particulars of the story and I'm just being ignorant now.
I mean, you know, the thing about Harpo is Harpo really was a sprite in real life. And you can't pretend to be a sprite. You just don't.
Yeah.
You don't.
You are or you're not.
You are or you're not. Yeah. And you can get away with those moments of whimsy. At moments other people would, you know, would shriek and turn pale and fall on the floor.
I would like to think I have a little bit of that in me.
Well, I believe you do.
Well, I mean, I will tell you, and here's something I've never mentioned on here, I know. The very first time I went to see Dr. Sylvia von Kruger.
Oh, our mad scientist friend.
Yes, our mad scientist German friend.
Yeah. Who could get away with wearing a monocle very easily, don't you think? She could pull off the monocle.
She's a pince-nez.
No, anybody...
She's a pince-nez. Oh, no.
Anybody named Von Kluge can get away with a monocle.
I disagree, and I'll tell you why. Because she needs to make that frowny mouth while she's putting on her pince-nez.
She can put it on.
And then that frowny mouth needs to stay after she's got him pinched on her nose.
Okay.
While she's considering whatever she's looking at.
All right, okay.
I'm just saying. Right. I love Sylvia.
Yes.
All right, so the very first time I met her, I was going to be late. And I couldn't get a hold of her. And I didn't know how much longer it was going to be because this was pre-iPhone. This was like about 6 or 7 years ago.
Yeah.
Because we were dating.
That's right.
Yeah. So, because that's how I met her. I was flying back and forth and I met her at the airport.
Yeah.
I was sitting, this is how I met this woman and she's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I was sitting in the red zone at the airport. You know how they have that red carpet part and it's like for fire lane only and you're supposed to stay out of it? Mm-hmm. Our flight was delayed and I was like, forget about it. So I went and sat over there because everyone else was crowded by the gate. And I'm just sitting in there painting my fingernails all by myself, you know, because the rest of the airport was shut down and we were totally delayed. And she walked over and dropped her bag next to me and she goes, I like you. And I said, hello, stranger. And she said, not for long. And she sat down with me and I was like, it was like such a movie meeting. And that's how I met my friend Sylvia. It was like so great. And we were both from Detroit. Her dad was a magician. How weird. And her mom is still a magician, and her mom performs plate spinning at the Magic Castle all the time. And Ed Sullivan, the reason they came to America from Germany is Ed Sullivan paid to bring them to the country. And Sylvia arrived in America from Germany in a picnic basket lined with real leopard skin.
That's a good way to make an entrance.
That's the way you come into the world. I'm sorry, but it is.
Does she have a monocle?
No. Because she would wear pince-nez. I already told you that.
But maybe as a baby.
You're losing the inventory of the scene here. See?
Sorry.
So anyway, now the first time I was ever going over her house, this, like I said, this was pre-iPhone days. So, and I didn't know how much longer it was going to be, but I did know I was going to be late. So I tried to call her on my cell phone because I did have a cell phone then. And I couldn't get through So I just called the police. And I was just like, hey, I'm really sorry to bother you. I called a non-emergency number. And I was like, I'm trying to get through to Sylvia von Klug and there's no answer. And I know I'm going to be late. Do you just know how much farther it's going to be from where I am on the freeway? And the lady goes, well, it's probably about this far. We're not busy. Do you want us to go to the door and tell her how long you're going to be? And I said, yeah.
Not busy? A police department that's not busy?
That's what she said. And so I was just talking to the lady, and I was like, oh, I wish there was some way I could let her know. And the lady goes, well, I'll just send an officer over there and let her know you're on your way.
What? Well, apparently Sylvia lives in the merry old land of Oz.
She lives in Ann Arbor, Michigan, by where U of M is. It's not, there's nothing going on.
That kind of is the land of Oz.
They had a guy on the beat, and so, but here's the thing. And so, the very first time I'm ever going over her house, I'm preceded by a police officer saying, are you Sylvia von Kluge? Do you know Misty Lee? And she's like, yes. And he said, well, I'm just here to let you know she's going to be a little late. And Sylvia's like, okay. Is she arrested? And he's like, no, she called the department. We just figured we'd stop by. And I got there and she goes, who are you? She was like, who are you that the police officers will come to my door and tell me you're going to be late? And I said, I don't know. They just did it. And she's like, who are you?
See, that's
great.
And I'm
like, I'm the girl that sits in the fire lane and paints her fingernails. She's like, right on.
Get shit done for her.
You see, also randomly called the cops to ask how far away you were from her house.
Yeah, well.
See, there it's...
I didn't know. I don't remember. It's been like, 8 years or something, 7 years. And I don't remember exactly how the story went, but it was something like that. But anyway, they offered, and I took them up on their offer.
Your tax dollars at work. I mean, that's what the police should do. They should be out to do friendly stuff like that.
I'll tell you what they shouldn't do is come to your house dressed down in their street clothes because you passed them in a no passing zone and turned their lights on in your driveway. Did I tell you that story? Oh my God.
That
when
was
I
a
lived
cop
in Elsie. No, he did not want to be my pal. He certainly did not want. That is not how you make to be my friend.
Okay.
I'm going to tell you what happened.
Trying to pick you up or something.
No, he was not. He was trying to give me a ticket, but he couldn't and he was mad. Here's what happened. And I was wrong. You don't pass somebody in a no passing zone. But in my defense, okay, it was a flat road. I could see a mile in front of me, a mile behind me. There was nothing. It was totally safe to do so. But there was a double yellow line. Because we weren't there. Oh, but he was off duty. He was in his freaking Ford Escort. And I zipped around him because I was late for work. Because I'm not anymore, but I used to be late for everything. But now I'm on time for everything because I have to be. Because like sessions start. If you're not there, you have to be there, period. Yeah. So, early is on time is late, and late is unacceptable, period. That's just how we roll now.
Yeah.
But back then I was late for work. And so I zipped around this guy and I didn't speed or anything. He was just going much slower than he should have been. I don't know what he was doing. He's probably on his cell phone. So I zipped around him and I went to work. And so that night I get home from work and there's this big floodlight shining. There's a police officer slowly rolling up the street and a big floodlight shining in the backyards of these houses in Elsie.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, what the hell? And I thought nothing. I mean, I thought it was weird, but eh. So the next day I get a knock on my door. There's a police car in my driveway with the lights on.
Uh-huh.
My friend Liz is over. We're having macaroni and cheese, which the little girl I lived with, I should say, would not eat unless she was wearing a scuba mask. I'm just saying.
Okay.
Well, the goggles. What? It's not a scuba mask.
A faceplate.
The face goggles.
Yeah.
You know, like the eye and nose covering, like a snorkel mask.
Yeah, snorkel.
So, and she would only eat them if she had that on.
She could drown in that album.
Well, she's diving
Alex
through melted
Wandwa
cheese.
Alex Wandwa Ann Palin. That's how she used to say her name. She's really cute. And she's beautiful now. She's like 16 now. She's gorgeous. But anyway, so Liz and I are making Alex Wandwa some macaroni and cheese. And she's sitting there in her little face mask. Mm-hmm. And the lights are on in the driveway. And a police officer comes to the door. And he's like, are you Misty Lee? And I'm like, are you going to strip? because what are you doing here?
Yeah.
I didn't order that. You know, like, what are you doing in my house? And he goes, may I come in? And I said, like, not if you're a vampire. You know, like, I mean, I don't even know what to say to this guy because I've done nothing wrong. At least I thought I hadn't. And he comes in the kitchen. Do you know why I'm here? And that was when I said, I don't know. You're going to strip? And Liz was like, oh, my God. I'm like, well, you want a sandwich? What are you doing in my kitchen? So he says, well, the reason I'm here is because 2 days ago on this boulevard, you passed me in a no passing zone. And I was off duty, so I couldn't pull you over. But I want to let you know that in Elsie, Michigan, we are safe drivers. And I was like,
wow.
Yeah, right. Bye.
I bet he looked up your picture and saw that you were hot and came over to
No, he was not trying to pick me up. He was a little pimple
really?
With an authority complex because he tried to nail me and give me a ticket. And I don't mean nail me in that way. I mean, like, he tried to give me a ticket the entire 2 years I lived in Elsie.
You got fifed.
Wow.
You got Barney Fife.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Barney Fife. Barney Fife is
It's not helping.
The deputy.
I know who he is, but what does it mean to be Barney Fife?
I don't know. I just made it up. Like when I guess when a little Martinet of the law comes over and throws his weight around, you got Barney Fifed.
Yeah.
Fifed.
I just
made it up. Someone post that to Urban Dictionary.
So that everyone else can say, what does that mean?
You got fifed.
Yeah, I guess I got fifed. But I mean, he was a pest. And not, I mean, in Elsie, nothing happens there.
Yeah.
Okay? Nothing. I'm sure there are bodies of visitors buried all over the cow fields out there, but nothing happens there that the people who live there know about.
Now, was the cow named for Elsie, or was Elsie the cow named for the place?
I don't know. I think it's a chicken or the egg thing. I'd look it up on Wikipedia.
But Elsie the cow is prominently.
Yeah, it's Elsie.
Okay, I gotta say that.
Can
Elsie
I finish? Really
yeah,
quick.
Okay.
But
yeah.
These people were so, the cops were so bored that if you ordered a pizza and didn't pick it up, they would come to your house.
Would they bring the pizza?
Something was wrong?
No, they only bring the pizza if I'm going over Sylvia's.
Nice.
Well,
all right, so what were you going to say? I'm sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say that Elsie the cow used to creep me out. You know, there
I'll
was...
tell you who should have creeped you out is Elmer, the cow, the glue.
Well,
no reason for a cow to be on a bottle of glue. It should be a horse if they're going to be.
Well,
pressed.
The whole family. I remember they had these ads where they were painted Alex Ross real. You know,
what?
Like Elsie the cow.
We just
Elmer.
Saw those at the Shine Gallery.
I know. That's why I pointed it out to you.
Well,
I go,
now that
oh,
I know
God.
That you're getting one for Christmas.
No, I hate those.
Oh, yeah.
Elmer was like this big masculine bull standing on his hind legs, and Elsie was always wearing an apron. But they looked like real.
Yeah, they
cattle,
looked like June Cleaver.
Hideously distorted. Mm-hmm. And was her baby named Veal or something? Must have been. I don't know.
Well, it might as well have been. But I'm going to tell you what I'm going to do with that.
What's that?
I'm going to frame it and hang it above the axe, Beaver.
Okay. Fine. I'm good with that. Can you get a holiday one? Like a Christmas one? Like one of them, I don't know, carving out pieces
not
of themselves.
Not if you're fine with it. That takes all the fun right out of it.
Oh, I don't know. It's just
It's only fun if you're scared.
Okay, I'm scared about a lot of things, but and that's one of them. So I don't know. I'd have to go on a picture-by-picture basis.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we're talking about the police. Do you want to talk about this Occupy thing?
Well, it's going to be over by the time this airs, so probably not.
Well, I don't know. I don't understand.
Eating this up with nonsense. But did you have something you wanted to say about it? Because I know you were reading Frank Miller's diatribe. But keep in mind, by the time this airs, and you can leave all this in, Ezra, you don't have to edit this out because this is our qualifier to you folks at home. It's going to be 2 weeks old. So do you want to talk about
it? I think Occupy will still be going on by then. But I'm not really sure what to make of it all. You know, because it sounds like, you know, I think that people thinking and questioning government is always a good thing.
I think
thing.
It's a good thing.
Oh, I think it's a great thing. But and also letting people letting the government know they're unhappy is a great thing because, you know, the country's in sad shape in a lot of ways. And
well,
if
we
leave it to legislators and government people, it'll never get any better. They'll just shuffle the money around until the people who... It's like a big nest full of screamy little birds. And the birds over here haven't had their chewed up spittle lately. So we got to give them some chewed up worms. And then, oh, this group over here needs some and this one... But everybody else is just sort of out of the nest and waiting for a little droplet to hit us.
Mm-hmm.
And now it seems like people are saying, we don't like this. I mean, the government is not giving us any solutions to what's going on here.
Reagan said years ago, trickle-down theory will help, and we're just waiting, right?
No, it's like trickle-down, you know, but everybody up top has got sponges, you know. They're absorbing everything. And
also, when they pee upstream, it becomes a problem.
Yeah. It's I really don't know what to make of it. I don't know all the whys and wherefores about how it got started, and I think some of it is just there'll always be a lot of that old hippie feeling in the country, like, you know, outrage, and we want to protest and we want to take the streets. And I think when it's peaceful, that's a good thing. But I also feel like the wealthy people in this country aren't going to give up anything unless they're forced into doing it. And they're incredibly powerful with their, you know, hooks in the government and everything. So I'm sort of mystified. I'd love to get people talking. Ideally, I'd love to just, you know, find a way to force, I don't know, the government to sit down with big business and the unions and say, look, here's what the problem really is. And I understand, I'm not very educated in this. I don't know anything about it. But here is, like, my little guy in the street point of view. It's like, everybody sits down, government, big business, labor organizations, anybody else who wants to be at the table. And it's like, the big problem that nobody wants to discuss is that the corporations have gotten fat and almost psychotically greedy, you know, in their grabs for money. And they have outsourced every element of manufacturing, and every other thing else they can possibly outsource has gone overseas so they can reap the benefits of this. And it's not like you're saving money, you're just wasting the money in different ways. And then you've got people who can go to work, but the corporations are saying, well, we can't put those people back to work because it's too expensive. Why is it too expensive? Well, the costs of operating are way too prohibitive. Really? It's like, when I go back to the line from Chinatown, when do you have enough? You know, when is enough enough? You know, that's not the line, but I'm sort of paraphrasing it, you know. And it, okay, in the past, labor unions have been accused of feathering their own nests and taking payoffs and everything like that. But, you know, you have to ask yourself, isn't a thriving, working community better than people sitting idle? Isn't it better to have manufacturing going on at some point? And if the guys on top aren't getting every cent of their profits, or if they have to share it around, you know, that's not a bad thing. It keeps a thriving middle class. And then the unions will say, well, yeah, but we want our benefits and our retirement and, of course, our health care. And then the health care gets in there, and health care is designed to scare people into buying insurance and pay a premium while delivering very little in return, you know. So somebody has got to come in and say, okay, you guys got to play fair. Government, you can't show bias toward this one group simply because you're getting a payoff. Labor unions, you've got to have some give and take here. You got to ease up a little bit and play by your own rules. Corporations, you have to bring business back. And if it means you only get $500,000 bonus this year as opposed to a $10 million bonus, you have to suck it up and make good with that. And everybody just play fair. But I don't know who can impose something like that. You know, it's like, Superman, where are you now? You know, it's like, who is mighty enough to impose that, or at least get people talking like that? Someone's got to get them talking like that, or else we're all going to collapse.
We need a president or something.
Well, the president, I mean, I think Obama's a good man, and I think he's a good speaker and everything, and I think he made the same mistake Clinton made. And Clinton, early on, both, I remember Bill and Hillary just throwing themselves at health care, trying to bring that down, and that wasted at least the first 3 years of the Clinton presidency. It's wasted the first 3 years of Obama's presidency. Healthcare is the unslayable dragon. I'm sorry, it is. It just, until someone finds a way to, until that dragon rots from within, we're not going to be able to kill it. So why go after it? It's like, there are other problems, you know? Healthcare is built on what made America. When you get right down to it, it's built on fear. It's like, we are going to scare you into having health care. You will die without this. You will be sick. You will be poor without this
healthcare. Well, and when you do have health care, they treat you like they treated your friend, that comic book writer.
Yeah, it's like, well, we will provide you the minimum amount of service to get you back on the road. But if you need therapy beyond that and you're not covered for that, we will take it away and you're left to fend for yourself. And it's, you know, I've known a lot of people who had, you know, my health care is covering all this, you know, and it's very comprehensive, until you have a problem. And then you discover, you know what, this friend of mine had to get a wheelchair for his mother because she had a stroke. And it turns out that the wheelchair that the health care covered for was a vastly inferior and actually painful model for her to sit in. Whereas an upgrade would, you know, allowed her to do everything that she wanted to do, but that they didn't cover it. and it wasn't possible to pay for an upgrade. For some reason, I think it was just unbearably.
You had to get the insurance one or pay cash for the other one.
Or pay cash for the other one. Or else, or in some way that maybe even invalidated the first claim or something. If you're buying stuff on your own, then you don't need any health care. It's really rigged. It's, you know, healthcare is designed for supermen.
It's a business. It's designed business. To make money.
It's like we are providing maximum return. Healthcare is designed to provide maximum return for our investors, the stockholders, by putting a Band-Aid on sick people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it infuriates me that when I see programs on science, for instance, where they talk about curing cancer or medical marvels or everything, and it's like, it's amazing that stuff exists. It's a testament to mankind and the brilliance of the human brain that we can devise these things. But the catch-22 is you'll never get them because no healthcare, you know, We'll cover that. You know, we can regenerate skin. We can, you know, do whatever, you know, marvel you're looking for, but you won't get it. You won't get, you know, you won't lose an eye, and then somebody will donate an eye because, you know, who's going to pay for that? You'll have to pay out of pocket for that. You'll have to pay millions of dollars for that treatment, you know, for experimental treatment. Rank and file people will never, ever get that.
Mm.
And it's the same way with, like, the space program, you know. You know, we could go to the moon if we wanted to, but, you know, we're too busy fighting and spending money and wasting our time here. You know, mankind is like a real split animal. You know, one half is total animal that just wants what everybody else has and will kill to get it. And the other kind is sort of this visionary being that imagines, that strives for things and dreams and everything. And you just, the two just so rarely get together on the same page.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really unfortunate. I don't know what this has to do with Occupy or anything, but
I don't either. I was waiting.
I mean, I'm lost in space. I admit that. But, you know, I see people asking questions, and that kind of gets back to what I'm talking about, or saying, why aren't things better? And, you know, the question remains, why aren't things better? Why
asking
isn't
questions
somebody doing
is one thing, and the Occupy movement, I think it's different city to city at this point because right. It's so splintered and fractured. But I think that a smaller circle of influence would increase efficacy.
Mm-hmm.
If people actually knew what they were fighting for instead of just sitting in a spot, then they would be invoking that change and provoking thought as opposed to just saying we want change. That's not enough. You have to say we specifically want X and go after that one thing. And I think that's what the whole movement has been missing.
Well, yeah.
Everyone I've ever asked about when it first started, I was like, so what exactly do you want? What is the cause?
What's the one thing?
Where do I go to find out about this?
Mm-hmm.
And it's all just everywhere. It's just, oh, I want to do this, and I want to do this, and we have this idea for that. And yeah,
those things need to be splintered mm-hmm. focus groups. This is what we were talking about. I was talking about PETA and how PETA is splintered, and I love what they do, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. But that ethical treatment is splintered according to people's specific mm-hmm. mores and values. You have people that absolutely don't eat meat. You have people mm-hmm. that absolutely don't eat fur. Who eats fur? Nobody.
No.
That don't wear fur. You have people that, and they'll persecute and prosecute people who do. There are people that just want to educate so that people are making an intelligent decision about animals that die for them.
Sure.
There are people that want to change kenneling. There are people that want to change the way dog pounds euthanize. There are people that, you know, like there's a lot of those things.
Mm-hmm.
But unless those things go in specific focus groups, the ads for PETA and things like that get really, really generic, and it's impossible to affect specific change.
I know.
And so you work really, really hard for a really long time. And this is, I was talking about Boston Buddies, which is a dog rescue that I work with, and how they have to set boundaries. And I think the key to success, and this is something that I've been specifically working on this month, is setting personal boundaries. Hello, thank you for calling me. You know, like if it's someone who doesn't call me frequently, they almost always want something. And there's nothing wrong with that because I call people because I want something too. And I don't mean that in a greedy way. I mean, someone has, you know, hey, I have a question for you, or hey, I want to chat with you about this, or how do you feel about your agency? And would you turn my demos in? Those are totally legitimate phone calls and I'm happy to take them. But these people have X amount of time that they get. And I try to get right to the nitty gritty because otherwise some people I'm thrilled to spend an hour and a half on the phone with, and then it's like, oh, by the way, and then we're on the phone another hour and a half, and I'm just trying to be effective and set boundaries. And so I used Boston Buddies, this dog rescue that I work with, as an example. Boston Buddies' focus is specifically Boston Terriers and Boston Terrier mixes in Southern California. That's all they do.
Right.
Because if they try to help all the dogs at any shelter in Southern California, it would expend their resources and they would be completely ineffective. But because they have one focus, this breed, this area, they are extremely effective. And I think, and you know what, I'm not even going to give you a statistic because I don't think it would be accurate and I would be guessing. But since that is their focus, no Boston Terrier in this area dies, no Boston Terrier in this area dies. If in Southern California, because Boston Buddies exists. If one goes on rescue, and every single morning they call all the shelters in Southern California, and I don't know how many there are, probably 15, I'd say at least. Do you have any Boston Terriers? Yes. When will it be released? We want to put a rescue hold on it. Do not euthanize that dog. Do you have any Boston Terriers? Yes. Are they hurt? Let us take it on a Good Samaritan badge and get it over to the vet, because otherwise these dogs sit in the pound broken. Like with a busted jaw, with a broken leg.
And then they're destroyed.
But yeah, and then they're destroyed anyways, you know. But because they have such a tight focus, they can affect change immediately. Mm-hmm. So if each one of us takes our mores, values, and ideals and changes our circle of influence in our life, educating people around us and knowing what's important to us specifically, worldwide change can happen. But it's got to start on an individual level. And that's where I think this Occupy thing has gone, is because they're not even thinking as groupthink. They're not thinking as this giant amoeba. They're thinking as little tiny pieces and parts that are in this mass. And so therefore, it's difficult to affect specific change because they're not lobbying against this specific pharmaceutical company that committed this specific atrocity. They're mad about corporations, and yet they're on their BlackBerries. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and
so that's
like, wait a minute. Do you even know what you're fighting against?
Because if we're fighting against big corporations, yeah, it's like you're texting your order to Starbucks to run across the street and pick it up.
Right, I think a more effective way to handle that would be for a bunch of really smart people who have a problem with Verizon, AT&T, and this, to start their own company and say, we're doing this movement. All the money goes to nonprofit. Buy this kind of phone. If you don't like big corporations and you care where the money goes, this is where we're putting our money, and our books are public. Come buy our stuff. And if enough people feel that way, boom, that change is made. And that's all I'm trying to say.
Well, we had some friends who were in New York recently, and they went down to the Occupy Wall Street movement to show some support. And I asked them, you know, later, like, how did that go? And I didn't really get a straight answer. It was sort of like...
They said it was fun,
but also unfocused. You know, I got the idea that it was unfocused and kind of every which way. And I think that a lot of people are attracted to kind of like, okay, it's street carnival and it's chance to protest and it's chance to get out there and have fun.
It's a chance to be a part of something, which is a big deal. But again, it's got to have a focus in order to achieve its maximum efficacy.
But I also grew up during the Berkeley riots. I was a tiny kid
then. Yeah, you were really frightened by that.
But, you know, yeah, we were driving. My doctor's office was downtown in Berkeley. And so we're driving in my dad's old red Volkswagen Beetle. And, you know, people are coming over and trying to set us on, you know, on the side. You know, they're rocking it around and smashing in the windows and everything. There's tear gas going. I got a nice lung full of tear gas at an early age, so I knew what that was about. And it's like, but I understood even then, they don't like the war. They don't like the Vietnamese war, because this was like 69, you know, and they were still protesting the war. You know, they want that out. Then I understood there was, you know, the People's Park riots. I knew what those were about. I knew that there was a fight between, you know, I understood.
But you also watched people who were peacefully protesting be dragged off the street by police and beaten brutally.
Yeah. And that's, you know, at age 9, it's like, I don't need to watch this.
Very dynamic.
But here it's almost more like street theater. You know, let's all go. Let's all be part of the big experience because we were bored and we want something to do. And yet, yeah, I'm sure there's a legitimate reason for this, but I, you know, it's like, what do you want in each city?
That's all I was saying. And I don't think we can generalize because we haven't spoken to every single occupant. We haven't spoken to every single protester. And I'm sure there are plenty that do know exactly what they want. And I'm sure that there are plenty that do know exactly what kind of changes they're trying to make. And there is a very legitimate reason for being there. So it's unfair for us to generalize
and just say,
movement's unfocused.
Yeah, what I fear is, you know, and this, I'm surprised this hasn't happened yet. It probably will be happening by the time this airs. There's some emergent figure will kind of come to the fore as, you know, the rallying person of the Occupy movement. I don't know if there is
like
one.
Like a charismatic dictator?
Like the rock star leader. In the terms of Aesop's fables, it's the log Zeus throws down to placate the croaking frogs.
Mm-hmm.
In the fable, there are a bunch of frogs croaking, you know, we want a leader, we want a leader. So they they send, so Zeus is amused by this, so he sends a log into their pond, and they all go, oh, it's our great god, oh, and then once they realize it's only a log, they start croaking louder for a leader, and Zeus is pretty pissed off by this point, sends us a heron that eats them all. Mm-hmm. So, now is a moment where somebody, where a really charismatic, rock star type personality could come in and sweep to power. And on pure charisma alone, Americans love that. They love they love that. We want Mr. Quick Fix.
We could have new gods, G. Gordon Godfrey or something like that in here.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. We want Mr. Quick Fix. We want an approachable Jesus. We want Santa Claus. We want a guy who's going to appear as if by magic and stuff our stockings and give us the good word and lead us to the hallelujah land. However we get there, and probably the easiest way possible, probably floating on chairs like those blimps in WALL-E, you know, as soon as we can get to the happy land, take us there, Pied Piper. And my fear is somebody like that's going to show up and a lot of people are going to fall for it. And it's just going to be some clown on an ego trip. But whatever happens, happens. If that's the guy you want to follow, go with God.
Well, again, the only thing that I can say about this is that if we are each making our own choices every single day, then if a charismatic clown rises to power, it's because that's how the mass majority truly feels.
Yeah, and
am I being wayward? I don't know. I'm so nervous.
If you know what you want, you can focus. Yes. Your demands and go after this.
I just want to leave it everybody with the thing that if you want to make change, know what you're trying to do and go do it. Because each and every one of us has the power to be that influential, that charismatic, and to make those changes. At least that's my opinion. That's the one opinion that I really hold true to, is that you can change. And this is a woman who had the police go to somebody's door and say, hey, she's going to be late. You know, I mean, like, this is, you can do it. You know, I mean, it's like, just go do it. If it's that important to you, you go do it. Don't go on somebody else's bandwagon. Make sure that you, every single day, every day, are making the changes you want to make and being the person you want to be.
Because if you want to affect change, it begins with you.
Mm-hmm. And me. And you.
Yeah.
And Ezra and Emily. And Mugsy.
What about you, Rashi?
Nah. I'm just going to blow some shit up.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
This has been another episode of Radio Rashi. If you've enjoyed this episode, let everyone know by leaving a review in the iTunes store. It's a great way to help others find us. You can also leave comments on RadioRashi.com, Facebook.com/RadioRashi, or follow us on Twitter @RadioRashi or @Paul_Dini to leave us questions. Thanks for listening, and tell your friends.